Live from the EPB Fiber Optic Studio, this is WLND Signal Mountain, Chattanooga.
Health, wellness, lifestyle, nutrition, and so much more. Welcome to Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial on 98.1 The Lake, a production of Whitfield Media Group, with your hosts, Ed Jones, owner of Nutrition World, and Dr. Christopher Green, board-certified medical doctor.
Good morning and welcome to Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial right here on 98.1 The Lake. Thank you so much for joining us and taking time on your Sunday morning. We're a radio show that's all about health, wellness, lifestyle, nutrition, and healthy living. I am Sean Whitfield, and I am filling in for the legendary holistic navigator, Ed Jones.
Where is Ed? Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Where is Ed Jones?
He could be up in his plane somewhere, or he could be on a deserted island, or he could be camping. You just never know with Ed.
I know, but he's not here. We do know that.
That's for sure. So he's taking a little bit of a break, and the other gentleman that you hear the voice of, you know so well if you're a regular listener to the program, and that is Dr. Christopher Green, board-certified medical doctor with CHI Memorial, Georgia. So good morning, Dr. Green.
Good morning, Sean. Thank you so much for filling in. So, yes, people, I have a new partner in crime today, and Ed has left us for a well-deserved vacation. Yeah. So very thankful to be here, though, back in the studio. Last week, I was at that undisclosed Starbucks. Had a great time there.
You got a vacation last week.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot of fun. So
sometimes you just kind of have to disconnect and recharge.
It was honestly fun. And the funny thing is, if you want to clear out a Starbucks, just start talking on the radio, I found out. And so people just disappear. So, you know,
people look at you funny.
Oh, yeah. Once I had the computer out, there was actually a homeless person in there at the time. And even that person looked at me like, I don't want any part of this, and got up and left. It was a bit amusing to me while I was on the air. So people would come and sit down. I'm having this discussion with nobody, as far as they know. So they're seeing this schizophrenic man looking at his computer and having a conversation just one-sided, and they had no idea what was going on. People disappeared by droves. I found myself alone after a while. It was interesting. So, but, you know, very happy to be here. Ed, we do miss you. Sean and I are having a great time. Very thankful to CHI Memorial. We're making a lot of progress, by the way, Sean, on that North Georgia hospital.
So what's the latest?
Well, the latest is we're looking hopefully to start breaking ground around July of 2020. So, you know, that is not written in stone. You know, there's so much financing, so much money that has to come to play here. But we are planning a 60-bed hospital with, you know, starting at least, I believe, 4 ORs and room for 6 and about a 20-bed ER. So it's, and I may get those numbers wrong, but, you know, that is just the initial plan. It's a fully functional community hospital. So
how does that rank on the scales for a community? Is that a small hospital, medium? How do you have any idea?
I would count it more as it's a medium community hospital, but small. You know, if you think about the average, you know, big city hospital being 400 to 600 beds.
Okay.
The old Hutchison, you know, which is now CHI Georgia, we don't have all the beds going, but, you know, there's like 170 to 200 beds and something like that available. So it's relatively small, but you're looking at state of the art, brand new hospital with brand new equipment, up to the current codes, larger rooms. If you've ever visited some of the rooms, you know, the tower that was built at CHI Main downtown. Have you been in any of those?
I have, but it's been a long time.
Well, as you know, the new rooms are larger. The codes are different. So your room size is large. You have a separate sitting area, better bathroom. So it's just a better facility, almost like a hotel room with a hospital bed is what it seems like to me. So very nice facilities at CHI Main. And, of course, they built all the new facilities for the cardiologists, cardiothoracic surgeons, CCU and whatnot. So we'll be doing the same kind of thing in North Georgia. And for everybody listening, that's right there in where the parking lot is right now for 4700 Battlefield Parkway. We'll have to move the parking lot somewhere else. But this is something that we need, and it's one of those, you just have so much history with the old Hutchison. There are so many people in this area that go back, you know, 30 or 40 years, and they don't want to go, say, to the old Hutchison. Granted, it's not the same Hutchison. CHI Georgia is basically the same shell of a hospital that's been revamped from the inside out. You know, millions poured into that to improve the facility. And it's staffed by the same people you'll find at CHI in Hickson or CHI downtown. So it is the same level of care that you would get anywhere else. But there's still an old stigma with the old hospital. So it'll be nice to have a brand new one with nothing but, I think, positive vibes. And it's something that the community really does need. And I will say this, we've also, just a couple of weeks ago, we had a meeting, and so all of the, not all, but many, say 20 to 30 primary care providers, specialties and subspecialties were all sitting down along with administration for CHI and Mountain Management, talking about what we want and what we need for the community and for each other. You know, how do we communicate best with, say, the breast surgeons and the OBGYNs and the general surgeons and the pulmonologist? We had urologists there as well. So we're trying to go ahead now, you know, years before we have the new hospital, and decide how do we communicate best for the care of the residents of North Georgia. That's a pretty good start, Sean, I think, that we're talking about it, you know, 3 to 4 years ahead of the completion of the hospital. You know, what are we going to want? And we're designing it as we go. So thank you, CHI. That is an excellent step, and it's going to be something great for the community.
You know, this is great information for the residents of Northwest Georgia, the Dade County, Walker, and Catoosa County area. I grew up in Chickamauga, being in Walker County, and I remember growing up as a kid and as a teenager, if you had something wrong with you, Hutchison was a second alternative. It was not the place you wanted to go to first. The level of care wasn't known to be what CHI Memorial in Chattanooga was, or Erlanger, or some of the other hospitals. However, CHI Memorial acquired Hutchison, what, 5 years ago, maybe?
Four to five years ago.
And so CHI Memorial has taken North Georgia and Hutchison Medical, or the former Hutchison Medical Center, and has just completely turned things around and given the residents of North Georgia a lot of opportunities for outstanding health care. And so what CHI Memorial has done for Northwest Georgia has been a blessing to many of the residents, because that was an area that of our area that, you know, I don't feel like had the best in health care.
You know, and think about it, right now we have dedicated breast surgeons, general surgeons, urologists doing procedures at Memorial, at Memorial Georgia. A lot of people don't even know that. I have patients still that I say, well, why don't you run down the street to the emergency room at CHI Georgia? They say, where is that? I tell them, they go, there's a working hospital. So even like in the last couple of weeks, I've had patients not know that we have a hospital there. I don't know how that's possible. It's in the news. We feel like we've advertised adequately, and still people think that it's the old Cornerstone or Hutchison, that it's not CHI Memorial. And even then, they assume that the name has changed, but the people are the old Cornerstone or Hutchison. And it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, just in the ER, it's a brand new group formed by ER docs just to staff the ER here. It's not the same people that were there before. Now, granted, some of the people may be holdovers because we had a lot of good docs there before. But the care is completely different, and it is commensurate to the CHI Main or Hickson. It's really not any different. But we still, it is still an old building. I'll give people that. And we do need new facilities, and that's exactly why we're doing it. So, and it'll be more convenient, closer to the interstate, you know, when it's down there by us at 4700 Battlefield Parkway. And I just could not be happier. I can't wait for the day where I can go and visit my patients in the hospital regularly. Back in the remote past, I worked also in the insurance industry when CHI was in that, and I loved just wandering the hospital, seeing my patients, just chitting and chatting with them. It was fun. And now that we were talking off the air, by the way, people, about how much primary care comes into contact with the specialists, and for 20 plus years we did our own inpatient and outpatient, and the paradigm right now has shifted so that people tend to be either an outpatient provider or an inpatient provider. And I've still done some of both since we switched to outpatient, but frankly, to do both is fairly difficult in the modern society. But I think people really do want the, you know, the day. If you were in the hospital and you were my patient, you're in for, let's say, pneumonia, wouldn't you like your country doctor just to drop by and say, hey, Sean, how are you? How's, you know, is your care okay? Are you okay? How's your family? That was part of the role we played, is just to put a little bit of humanity back into healthcare. And I think people really need their country doctor. They need their family doctor there, because otherwise it seems to be a mad rush of specialists all through. Not that they do a bad job, they do a great job, but a mad rush of specialists. It's confusing to patients and family, and they need somebody down to earth and practical to come in and just be a human being with them. And that's one of the services we provide as a family practice doctor, and a lot of internists and pediatricians do the same thing for the patients and the families. And with one literally feet from our current office, we'll be able to just walk over there and say, hey, how's it going? Is your care good? And several of us, Dr. Dant and I, were talking about that just the other day. We look forward to those days where we can do that again. We do miss that part. We miss the human touch. We don't miss getting up and rounding at 3 a.m. I will be honest with you. And we don't miss being there at midnight. Mm-hmm. So those parts of past lives are not missed. But the human touch of being in the hospital with our patients, we miss that. And we're going to get that back. And mm-hmm. that excites a lot of us.
Well, would you think this is probably a true statement that I'm about to say? And that is that it seems like organizations like CHI Memorial are putting a little more focus on the comfort of the patient when they go to design and create a new facility, because it seems like you're hearing more of a hospital room being like a hotel environment. Whereas before, it seems like when you think of a hospital room, you think of a TV and a bed, and it's not a place you want to be at very long. But it seems like there's more of a comfort or more of a home feel that hospitals like CHI are putting into the design and comfort of their facilities. Is that, you think, a true statement?
I think there is, and I'm not sure how much is, you know, not being in the construction business myself, how much mm-hmm. is code and how much is just desire. And it's hard to make a functional hospital room look good
and look
inviting.
Because you even made comments that rooms are bigger now.
They are bigger, and sitting areas and whatnot. I still remember when I was interviewing, gosh, for residency, how long has that been? So that's been a whole lifetime ago. So let's go back 20, 25
40 years.
40 years ago? Yeah, four, I wish.
40.
40, that's about right. It feels about right now. You know, if you think about it, most hospital rooms, the walls are full of suction equipment and all of your plug-ins and your oxygen and, you know, everything that's mechanical. Mm-hmm. What I am noticing, yes, you may have those things hidden behind, you know, decorative pictures, and they're not in plain sight, so it feels much more home-like. And yes, they are doing that. I've noticed that in the new room. So it's a combination of functionality and comfort. Frankly, if I'm in the hospital, I want a little bit of comfort. I don't want to just feel like I'm in an ICU all the time. I don't want to mm-hmm. feel that way. I want a little bit of homeliness, you know, something that feels more comfortable to me. And yes, that's the way it's going to be. And it will be a lot nicer and larger and more room for the families. If you remember that, there was no room for family in those days. You might be lucky if you had a footstool to sit on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, times are changing. And you've heard of the patient-centered medical home. It's something we've been talking about for 20 years in family medicine. It's coming into being a new paradigm for healthcare. And it is. It's trying to put the patient at the center so they don't just feel like they're being shoved around everybody, but really everybody is there to serve them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing. And it's all a collaborative effort, just like we sat down around a round table with 20 to 30 providers and some business people trying to figure out what we need to do for the patients of North Georgia.
Yeah.
Exactly what we were doing, try to put the patient first and figure out what we need to design around them. And that's the new patient-centered medical home.
Mm-hmm. And listeners out there this morning, I'd sort of say hospitals and healthcare is kind of like restaurants. And where I'm going with that is you have choices. It's your choice to go and choose who you want for healthcare and who you want to service you in your healthcare with a hospital. And that is something that you need to think about, and we encourage you to consider CHI Memorial.
Yeah.
And think about all those different benefits and advantages and the extreme high level of healthcare that CHI Memorial has to offer.
And also think about with community hospitals, I'm thinking of the feel, both as a patient and as a provider, a smaller community hospital, just like Hickson, it's not that any of the hospitals are bad, but the bigger the hospital, I find that's a bit more, has more of an impersonal feeling to me, but the smaller hospitals feel just more personal and home-like to me, and frankly, a lot of the people are happier that are working there, the staff. I've seen that over the last 25 to 30 years. Smallest hospital I ever worked in had 9 beds in Thompson, Georgia, tiny little place, so you could stand in one spot and round on all your patients without moving, almost. People need to keep that in mind. With CHI, you have 3 choices right now. You've got CHI Georgia, Hickson, and Maine. And by golly, we're going to have a fine place for them come 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, that's great information. Well, folks, we've got another great show planned for today here with Vital Health Radio. We're going to be talking with Dr. Pamela Sood, pulmonologist with CHI Memorial Lung Care Associates at the Buzz Standiford Lung Center. And she's going to be joining us, and we're going to be talking about pulmonary fibrosis. So this is going to be an interesting topic for me, Dr. Green, because I know hardly anything about the topic.
Well, it's not the most common subject, so we'll all be learning something today.
That's a good point. So I'm sure many of you out there listening this morning, maybe you're in your car headed to church or whatever you may be doing, you're kind of sitting in the shoes that I'm in thinking, okay, pulmonary fibrosis, I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it. So I'm going to be asking some of those questions that you would be asking, and to a medical professional, they may say that I'm going to ask some dumb questions, but I know many of you would say, well, I've got a lot of dumb questions to ask as well.
And there's no such thing as a dumb question. It's just questions
well,
you didn't
true.
Ask. So, but
that
if you've been having some shortness of breath or chronic cough, keep listening.
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to talk about that. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about the flu that's going around the area. It's that time of the year, and we'll talk about some ways to prevent that and how to deal with it.
And a new treatment that's coming out.
We'll also cover that as well, Dr. Green, and we'll talk a little bit about the opioid crisis. And so we got a lot to cover on today's show. Ed Jones is taking a weekend off. However, he will be back here again with us next week. We got a lot to cover on today's Vital Health Radio. And again, thank you so much for joining us and making us a part of your Sunday morning. For Dr. Christopher Green, I'm Sean Whitfield. Stay with us.
You're listening to Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial on 98.1 The Lake. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial on 98.1 The Lake.
Welcome back to Vital Health Radio, and thank you so much for making us a part of your day. If you're always on the move, download that free radio.com app to your smartphone or tablet and keep us tuned in each Sunday morning right here on 98.1 The Lake. We're a radio show that's all about your health, wellness, lifestyle, nutrition, and healthy living. I am Sean Whitfield, and I'm filling in for Ed Jones, as Ed Jones is enjoying some vacation time, Dr. Green.
I know. Can you believe such a thing? But, you know, last week I was out of town as well from that undisclosed Starbucks location, so everybody was patient with me, and we'll be patient with Ed, but I cannot blame him for not getting on the air from an ocean setting, you know?
I was going to say, do you think it's he decided, well, Dr. Green was away last week, I'm getting jealous, and it's time for me to take a break.
You know, I think that's exactly what it is, only I went to Starbucks, and he went to a nice beach, so he wins.
Yeah, well, I would agree with that, especially the beach location that he made it to.
I say you and I do that next week.
Yeah, I could use one right now, especially coming into the cold weather like we have been.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, well, we have a guest here on the EPB Fiber Optics Hotline, and that is Dr. Pamela Sood. She's a pulmonologist from CHI Memorial Lung Care Associates at the Buzz Standifer Lung Center. Good morning, Dr. Sood.
Good morning.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I guess the biggest thing we're going to be talking about today is just the subject of pulmonary fibrosis. If you would, what exactly is pulmonary fibrosis for those out there listening this morning that has heard the terminology but is wondering, well, what exactly is it?
Pulmonary fibrosis is a term that encompasses all scarring in the lungs. So there are different causes and different types, but pulmonary fibrosis in general is just scarring. And so when the lungs scar, you lose the ability to extract oxygen from the tissue that's scarred. And if it's something that's progressive, it can progress to the point where it affects your activities and your breathing. So it is a pretty serious thing, and there are many different causes.
So from my standpoint, can you talk to some of the common causes like smoking or environmental?
Chemical exposures, anything that causes an insult or an injury to the lung. So the way, just like with skin, you form scars, in the lung you form scars. So those type things, usually if it's one time somebody gets exposed to something, you get a certain amount of scarring and it's stable. But then there are other diseases that can cause problems, a lot of rheumatological diseases like lupus. So if that is not addressed, it can be progressive and cause significant damage to the lung. There's also something we call idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. When physicians use for idiopathic, as you know, Dr. Green, we mean that we can't find a cause. So it's something that we think either it's not identifiable or it's something similar to autoimmune diseases where it just happens. So the idiopathic type of pulmonary fibrosis is progressive. It's traditionally we find it in smokers, but it can be in people who don't smoke. And because it's progressive, it can cause significant impact to people's life because they can't breathe, they can't go about their routine activities.
Out of curiosity, what would you say is the most common cause, you know, other than idiopathic, causes that you see for pulmonary fibrosis?
Rheumatological diseases. So again, lupus, scleroderma, rheumatoid arthritis, those are pretty common causes.
Wedgener's, I have a few people with Wedgener's. I think that can do it.
Yeah, you can get some scarring related to that.
So what are some
of
the...
Again, if you identify the cause, you can stop it. You can hopefully, or slow down the progression or stop it.
What can you do for the idiopathic? So, if we, you know, and I know that, yes, this falls in my field, but we have so many people that are not medical listening to it. What can you do for the ones where you don't know the cause?
So after we've ruled out all possible causes that we can find, and we see that it's progressive, which is something we do, we find on CT scans of the chest, so we can identify that this is something that's progressive because we see all stages of scarring on the CT. We work up the patient for all other causes, and we can't find one, then we call them idiopathic. Up until about 5 years ago, there was no treatment. So it was a very tragic disease for patients because it would just progress and there was nothing that could be done about it. Lots of different things were tried. Nothing worked. But about 5 years ago, two drugs came on the market, and though they don't cure anything, they do slow the progression significantly. Idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, prior to medications, the life expectancy was 3 to 5 years, but it was not a good 3 to 5 years because of the symptoms. Now the life expectancies are much longer. I have patients that have been on medication for 5 years, and they've had some progression, but not terrible. And because these drugs are relatively new, we don't know what the impact will be on life expectancy. We just know that it's helping slow down the progression. People are living better lives and longer life.
So for someone out there listening this morning, what are some of the symptoms that would make them be aware that there's a potential problem and they would need to come see someone like you?
For pulmonary fibrosis, the two main symptoms are dry cough and shortness of breath. And so with both of those, they're symptoms that just don't go away. Patients will come in and they say, well, I've had this dry cough. It's annoying. And when people present initially with the cough, they're a little bit dismissive for a few months, and then they realize, okay, this is bothering me. It's waking them up at night. And then, of course, shortness of breath. A lot of us dismiss shortness of breath when we initially have the problem, and it's shortness of breath that can progress. And untreated, this can progress fairly rapidly, and we have people who've been short of breath for 6 months and they start to really have symptoms and it's getting worse, and so that's when they tend to present. So I always tell patients, or people in general, other doctors, don't dismiss shortness of breath. Always go and get evaluated if it's not going away. And if you don't have any respiratory infection symptoms, if you're not coughing up green sputum, if you're not having fevers, if you're just, you feel fine otherwise, but you just have this new shortness of breath or dry cough, go get evaluated.
And what are some of the treatments that you offer patients?
Well, we always offer symptomatic treatment. So we evaluate their lung function. If they have any airway obstruction, we put them on inhalers. If their oxygen levels drop, we put them on oxygen, which is really helpful for symptoms. But then that's really symptomatic treatment. And so there are two new drugs that have been around for about 5 years that slow the progression. And we evaluate the patients and decide which of the two drugs are better for them. Basically, they do about the same thing. They slow the progression of the fibrosis. One is called Ofev and one is called Esbriet. But there's some subtle differences in the patient characteristics. So those drugs are traditionally pulmonologists have to be involved to prescribe those because there's some subtle things that we look for in the patient to decide which drug is better for them.
Are those drugs extremely expensive?
They're both extremely expensive, but because they're new drugs right now, they're very strong assistance programs. So we've not had any patients who have any problems getting the medications, and none of our patients have had any problems affording medicines.
All right. Well, good deal. Because that's something, Dr. Green, I guess you come across very often is you have to also not only prescribe the proper medication for the problems that someone's having, but some of these drugs today can get so expensive that people can't afford them.
Oh, we do, and I don't think something like GoodRx is going to help you with that one, but I was just thinking, you know, Dr. Sood helps so many of my patients, and I'm very thankful for that, by the way. And you know, the Buzz Standard for Lung Cancer or Lung Center does help a lot of my patients as well. Mm-hmm. They give great care, so all of CHI does, as a matter of fact. as you know I like to say. You know, from a primary care standpoint, when somebody comes into us with a dry cough or any cough, shortness of breath, you know, we're thinking a wide net of causes. So, you know, pulmonary fibrosis is one of many. But I will say this, if anyone out there listening has a primary care doctor, you think you might have it, yeah, go see your primary care doctor. If that is what you have, yes, would probably refer and let a pulmonologist assist, because we don't have a cure for that in primary care, but now there are other options. Mm-hmm. So it's where you need to go.
Dr. Sood, is it fair to say that cigarette smoking has a lot to do with this problem with folks?
Well, cigarette smoking has a lot of negative impacts on the lungs. It's not something that we say causes pulmonary fibrosis itself, but it does contribute. People are more prone to infections, and post-infection you can get some scarring, which is fibrosis, and that's not a progressive type, but it's also not reversible. So yes, cigarette smoking does have a big impact. If a person does have the idiopathic progressive type, they need to stop smoking immediately, because you don't need to have something else damaging your lungs at the same time that you have this disease.
Hey, is there any type of rehab program available for people with pulmonary fibrosis?
Yes, so there are. There is pulmonary rehabilitation program, just like people go and participate in cardiac rehab, which gets more press. There's an excellent pulmonary rehabilitation program at Memorial. I always encourage patients that if they're going to do pulmonary rehabilitation, they do it with a lot of commitment and do it in a hospital-based program. Frequently, people want to do these home programs, and although they may be beneficial, they're not nearly as beneficial as an in-hospital program. So the program at Memorial is very aggressive as far as all types of activities, working on stamina, working on breathing exercises. We have exercise physiologists that are involved, respiratory therapists that are involved. It's very closely monitored. It's physically within the hospital building, so if there was any problems, there are physicians available. It's done in the same place as the cardiac rehab, so if anyone has coexisting heart disease, there are people there to take care of them. So, and it's an excellent program. Every patient that I've ever sent has come back with a good review and said that they've had improvement in their exercise tolerance. They feel that they're much better, their general health, they feel better. So I encourage people to also talk to their doctors about that, because primary care physicians can refer to pulmonary rehabilitation as well. And if a patient has any type of lung disease, overwhelmingly their insurance will pay for pulmonary rehabilitation.
Dr. Sood, for anyone out there listening this morning that would like to get more information or possibly reach out to you and the services there at CHI Memorial, how would you recommend them to do that, and where can they go online?
Online, they can go to the Memorial website. There's a lot of information about all kinds of diseases and lots of pulmonary diseases. If they want to come and see one of the physicians in our group, they can either ask their primary care physician to refer them, or they can just call our office and make an appointment. We have many good doctors in our group. If they have questions, they can always call our office. When we don't really have any kind of hotline or anything to help, but if there's something we could do, I'm sure we could call somebody back and help them that way. But the best way to get an appointment is really through your primary care, because if you don't have a lung disease, then your primary care doctor can figure that out, and then you don't have to come to see a pulmonologist.
And I would say for most of us, Sean, you know, if they don't have a known lung disease, yeah, see us first and make a diagnosis. If they know they have something, just give us a call. Most of us will be happy to refer.
Mm-hmm. All right, good information. Well, Dr. Sood, thank you so much for joining us and taking time out on your morning and giving us this great information.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. It is time for us to take a break. When we come back, we've got a lot more Vital Health Radio to come. For Dr. Christopher Green, I'm Sean Whitfield. Stay with us.
We're all about healthy living and enjoying life. Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial on 98.1 The Lake. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial on 98.1 The Lake.
Welcome back, and thank you so much for joining us and making us a part of your day. We're a radio show that's all about health, wellness, lifestyle, nutrition, and healthy living. I am Sean Whitfield, filling in for Ed Jones, the owner of Nutrition World and host of Vital Health Radio, along with his co-host. And joining me here this morning in the studio is Dr. Christopher Green, board-certified MD with CHI Memorial Georgia. And I want to let folks know that maybe you haven't checked it out yet. Be sure and check out our website, vitalhealthradio.com, built by Avalon Design Studio. It's a website that has got information about our show, what we're about, as well as you can catch all of our past shows on our website. So if maybe you're traveling down the highway and you hear Dr. Green or Ed talk about a topic that you want to get more information or make some notes about, or maybe it's a topic that you remember, hey, I forgot some of what they said and I want to hear that again. Well, you can do that. Just go to vitalhealthradio.com and click on past shows, and you can listen to any of the past shows that have aired here on Vital Health Radio. And all this is built to you by Avalon Design Studios. Dr. Green, I noticed you're doing a little coughing today.
Oh, unfortunately, I hope it's not disturbing the listeners too much.
Well, I only bring that up because you're not by yourself. There is a lot of folks that are dealing with a cold or flu right now. And you mentioned that there's some new treatment out there for the flu. But I also want to just talk about some of the basic things that folks can do to prevent themselves from dealing with sickness.
Well, first, anytime you get out of your house this time of the year, you're at risk. Lately, flu season has been going everywhere from about August through May of the next year. It is just crazy. It tends to get worse every year, I think. Yes, we'll talk about that new treatment in just a minute. And sorry, people, if you're listening to me being a little bit on the hoarse side or coughing, I apologize for that. But frankly, I consider myself blessed. We see 25 to 30 people a day, and frankly, most of those that are coming in are there for, say, let's say follow-up of diabetes, hypertension, cholesterol. Oh, by the way, I've been running a fever. Oh, by the way, I've had this cough for a week. My throat just started getting sore today. So out of the normal follow-up visits, probably two-thirds this time of the year are sick at the same time.
And you're in a small room breathing all this.
And we're in a small room breathing all this. Yes, we do have some of our providers that will wear a mask all day long, and frankly, I just can't stand that. So it would be smarter of me to do that. But considering the amount we're exposed every day, I consider myself fairly fortunate that I only get sick about every 6 to 8 weeks with something, and I complain about it more than I'm sick, typical of me. I mean, I told somebody, I think it was my nurse, and she said, you're a typical man. You complain about it. You gripe about it more than a woman would. So I think that's fairly true. We get the sniffles, and we just kind of walk around, oh, woe is me. I'm coughing and sneezing. But that's this time of year. That it's impossible, short of wearing a mask all the time, to protect yourself. But, you know, good hand washing, good hygiene. Make sure, I mean, you can clean your keyboard and your phone. About a year and a half ago, we talked about studies of what is the dirtiest thing in your work environment or home environment, and the phone was number one, keyboard was there, and frankly, phones were dirtier than most toilet seats. And that's a little bit disheartening. I tend to clean my phone. I clean my stethoscope on a regular basis, and I quit wearing a tie years ago because, one, I didn't like wearing the tie. Number two, there was actually a study culturing doctors' ties, and they were quite dirty. So I said, well, forget that. Mm-hmm. So I left the ties at home as well. But yeah, I clean my phone. I alcohol my hands on a regular basis, wash my hands on a regular basis. If we do, you know, Ed and I talk about how we unconsciously touch our face. People do. Ed tends to be very aware of that.
Yeah, that's a habit that many of us have.
But if you do, and I usually counsel people, if they touch anywhere, chest or above, go wash your hands. You probably just contaminated yourself. And if you have been shaking hands at church or anywhere else, please don't touch the face, nose, any place where, as Ed would say, any of your orifices. And he does that a lot on there. So don't touch an orifice. If you've been shaking hands with somebody, go and wash up. But it is flu season, and I did see, I guess it's been about a week ago, there was an ABC map about the flu epidemic, and Tennessee and Georgia were right there in the really bad zone right now. So people need to be careful.
Mm-hmm. I saw a story the other day about restaurants, and it was going through a list of 12 of the germiest locations in a restaurant. And of course, you and I both, we eat out a lot. So you get your germs at work, and then you probably get the rest of your germs in a restaurant.
Oh, where were they?
So what do you think was the number one area that was the germiest in a restaurant?
You see, I'm even thinking of things that maybe most people wouldn't like. The doorknobs. mm-hmm. things like that. So simple things like the doorknobs going in and out to me would probably be
yeah, but
filthy.
I'm looking for number one. What is the number one germiest location in a restaurant?
Well, let's think of something awful like the top of the table or the bar top.
You're close. Table was on the list. It was in the top five, but number one was the menus.
Oh, yes. That does make sense. Everybody handles those and hands them right back.
That's right.
And we tend to not think about that.
The menus. And many times restaurants don't wipe the menus down. I've probably noticed menus being wiped down more in a Mexican restaurant than I have another.
Because the salsa.
Because everybody's getting salsa all over them.
I'll be.
But other than that, but menus was the number one location.
But, you know, I'll tend to carry often, not every time, carry some hand sanitizer so you could sit down, do your menu, then sanitize your hands.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's I wanted to say bathroom, but everybody would say bathroom. But yeah. Think about the doorknobs. Think about how many people and, gosh, probably listeners would hate this, but how many men do we see leave a restroom and not wash their hands, just grab the door and leave? And we see that all the time, and men tend to be very unsanitary, in my experience, in the bathroom.
Well, you think about buffets. Buffets are salad bars. And I've always thought, you know, if I'm not a real big fan of buffets, but occasionally I'll go to a salad bar or maybe a buffet. And I've always thought, okay, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to get there between 11 and 12. I don't want to get there after 12 when 50 to 80 to 100 people have already been there and touched everything before I have.
I've had great difficulty going to any type of buffet like that ever since Vegas vacation when Cousin Eddie went up and got his food.
Uh-huh.
I always picture him, and he's sneezing on his hands and grabbing the food and the utensils, and every time I go to one, I think about that, and I just walk right back out. So I can't stand them.
Yeah. That's
except for a very fresh place, I will say, like Jason's Deli. Mm-hmm. They really do keep that salad bar nice and neat, and they clean it down. I've watched them before. Good job on their part, and I do not mind their salad bar. So it's one exception to my rule.
Yeah. So we've identified keeping your hands clean and sanitized and watching what you touch. Any other good advice?
There are plenty of things you can do just from a supplement standpoint, multivitamin, vitamin C, vitamin D. I keep elderberry at my house if I start getting sick. Manuka honey, we've talked about that on the air many times. So if people are, say, traveling.
Elderberry is that item that Ed refers to often about the toolbox.
It is one of the ones to have in your toolbox, and I've had that at in my house before I even knew Ed. So if I find myself getting sick, like this time, I've put myself back on some higher dose vitamin D. I don't quite go to there's a non-traditional recommendation I've heard of 50,000 units a day for like 3 days. No, I don't go quite that nuts, but I am doing 5,000 units a day, which is about all I feel like I can stomach, literally. But I keep the elderberry there, do that for a few days if I'm starting into a cold. I do have the Manuka honey. I've done that because this has only been going on for about 24 hours for me, so it's a brand new cough and cold for me. Mm-hmm. And I'll probably be back at the gym within just a few days.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't even mention gyms. Don't forget gyms as a potential site to catch things. You know, I wear gloves, you probably wear gloves when you're there, but you know, I'm fairly careful with what I touch at a gym, but a lot of people aren't. They don't clean down their equipment before or after, but people do need to be careful. For our gym rats out there, be careful. It's a good place to catch something. See if there's anything else that they can do. There's also mushrooms. Host Defense does make an immune support mushroom supplement you can get. Ed would love this. You can order it online at nutritionw.com, and it's going to be delivered fresh to you. So, you know, there are plenty of places you can buy that from. And, of course, I do love Ed. You love Ed, and Nutrition World does a great job. But that's one more place a lot of people aren't aware that Host Defense does have a good immune support, and I just started that yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, those are things I do. And as far as regular health and wellness, making sure that you are exercising, you know, so a healthy diet and exercise regimen. And I haven't done quite as well over the holidays as I should, and frankly I think, you know, we talked about that a little bit about catching colds, and if I am not on my game with my exercise, or if I'm under any type of other duress, you know, whether it be just stress at work, yeah, you're at a higher risk. So the more you can keep yourself in a stress-free environment or deal with that stress healthily, you will be sick less often. So for me, just getting up in the morning like I did today and having that, you know, 45 minutes to an hour of quiet time with a cup of coffee and my Bible, you know, I need that every single day to center myself. And we talk about in medical school the biopsychosocial model. They, you know, it's an a-religious type of description. But I think we are, you know, we are psychological beings, physical beings, spiritual beings. And I think that the health of all three of those is crucial to maintaining health in general, as well as avoiding things as simple as the flu. So I hope people out there do have their stress release. I know you do, I do, Ed does, and hopefully we've educated other people on how to do that, both, you know, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
So someone out there listening that has got a cold or thinks they have the flu, and they come to see someone like yourself, their general physician or practitioner.
Make sure and put on a mask when you get there, by the way. We keep masks at our front desk, so we'll hand those out if people think they may have the flu or have any infectious disease. We'll put them in a mask. And often at that point, if we think they have flu, I'll put on a mask as well. It's one of those times I will be wearing one because I want to protect myself from flu, because that will take you out for a while. Mm-hmm. You want to get to your provider as quickly as possible. You have about 48 hours to get treated and to make it the most effective.
How do you treat them once you identify what they have?
So in the past, there are a lot of different things that people can use. Tamiflu is one of the most common, but Xofluza has just recently come out. I believe it's spelled X-O-F-L-U-Z-A. If I've misspelled that, forgive me. But it's a one-dose therapy. So Tamiflu you can use as a preventative. So if someone in your household had flu and you knew it, you'd take Tamiflu one a day for 10 days. If you have flu, you take it twice a day for 5 days. With the Xofluza, and I'd have to look up to see if there is any type of prevention dose for that. I don't think there is, but it's approved down to children 12 years and older. And adults, and it's a one-dose therapy. If you've ever been on flu medications, and I have, they can make you quite nauseous and dizzy, and I've had side effects from them as well, but it's worth getting well faster. One dose, if you get side effects from that, who cares? I mean, I don't even care if I get a side effect from that because I don't have to take it again.
Now, so, none of those drugs are considered antibiotics, are they?
No, they're antivirals, so they work completely differently. So, you know, virus is technically not alive. It's just a protein shell and some DNA or RNA. So it's just genetic material that is then taking over the cells of your body to reproduce itself, and that's how they work, which is kind of gross, but that's all they're doing to you. The Xofluza and Tamiflu, they interrupt part of that process of reproduction of the DNA and RNA cycle. So that's how they work, but to me, to have a one-dose option is going to be something I can't wait to use. I just learned about it a few days ago or maybe a week ago. And I can't wait to start treating people with that because I think people will really like it. So we'll see. You know, haven't seen it for long and haven't used it before, and I'll let you know in a few weeks.
It seems like back in the day, and I say back in the day years ago, that antibiotics was what most physicians prescribed. And the common drug that sticks out in my mind that I took a number of times through my years is amoxicillin. Is that used very often anymore?
You know, it fell out of favor for a while, but this past year it's come back into favor as a first line for things like, you know, upper respiratory infection, pharyngitis, sinusitis. So it's back in vogue. Here's an odd thing. You may have heard about antibiotic stewardship over the last 15 years, and they've been preaching that to us all through residency and my adult practicing career, that you do not want to overprescribe antibiotics. That's what's been preached. Mm-hmm. The strange thing is, because of our good stewardship of antibiotics, less resistant strains may be emerging, but we're seeing the reemergence of strains that had been held down for many, many years. So there's one, suppurative thrombophlebitis of the internal jugular vein, Lemierre syndrome. So I remember seeing one case alone in med school, and it is now making a resurgence. Why? Because that germ is not being held down by the use of antibiotics. We're being so careful with them, it's able to grow. So that is an odd phenomenon we're seeing right now, just in the last year or so, is the resurgence of old germs because we're being so careful with our antibiotics. So, you know, we're still in, I think we're practical in primary care, at least in family medicine, and we are able to use our brains and our heart and our, you know, just our intellect to treat. We're not just automatically saying, well, you can't have an antibiotic because this test is negative. The tests are not 100%. If I check you, you know, this may sound strange to a lot of listeners, but we know what strep smells like. And so we often know walking in a room, and a lot of parents know what I'm talking about. You can walk in a room and know if your kid has strep. You just know that smell. And so if I walk in a room and I look at someone and I can smell the strep, I can see that on their throat, even if the test is negative, I'm probably going to treat with my Mark I eyeballs, and because I trust them more than the test, honestly. Mm-hmm. And the older we get in medicine, we're able to treat that way. And so we still treat with our heart and minds. But in the technically, if it tested negative, we're not supposed to treat you. So I think practical doctors are still out there like family doctors and will treat with their hearts and their minds and not just the test. But, you know, technically go in and get tested for it. Strep and flu tests, they are not 100%. And if your doctor does put you on a flu medicine or a strep medicine because they say they believe you have it, even if the test is negative, yes, go ahead and take it. Trust your provider.
All right. Great information. And we hope all of you out there listening have gained some extra tips on how to fight the cold and flu season. All right. It's time for us to take a break. When we come back, we'll have Dr. Green's spiritual moment and some final thoughts of today's Vital Health Radio. Again, thank you so much for joining us and making us a part of your Sunday morning. For Dr. Christopher Green, I'm Sean Whitfield. Stay with us.
You're listening to Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial on 98.1 The Lake. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial on 98.1 The Lake.
Welcome back, and thank you so much for joining us and making us a part of your day. If you're always on the move, download that freeradio.com or that iHeartRadio app to your smartphone or tablet and keep us tuned in each Sunday morning right here on 98.1 The Lake. We're a radio show that's all about health, wellness, lifestyle, nutrition, and healthy living. Also, check out our website, vitalhealthradio.com, built by Avalon Design Studios, and you can get information about Vital Health Radio as well as hear all of our past shows. So if you've missed a show or there's a show you would like to go back and revisit, you can do that at vitalhealthradio.com. I am Sean Whitfield, filling in for Ed Jones along with Dr. Christopher Green, and it is time for Dr. Green's spiritual moment.
Sean, yes it is, and I want to mention one more thing about flu prevention. Everybody, don't forget to get your flu shot. So without Ed here to counter me, I can tell you to go get that flu shot. There's also, you know, a nasal flu vaccine for kids, so feel free to visit your medical provider and get your influenza seasonal immunization if you have not yet done so. All right, now for the spiritual moment. It's brought to you by Silverdale Baptist Church. If you would like to learn more about Silverdale, just visit their website, which is silverdalebc.com. That's silverdalebc.com. They also have a nice app for your iPhone or Android. Let's start with Isaiah chapter 53, verse 4. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering, yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him, and afflicted. Now this is Isaiah speaking long beforehand about the suffering of Jesus, who was well acquainted with suffering. Well, whatever grief or loss we ever experience, God understands. One of the comforts God offers us is peace when we grieve a profound loss. Whatever has caused or is causing you grief, talk to God about the way you are suffering. Don't let your grief become a source of bitterness that poisons your life. God longs for a deep and abiding relationship with us. Because he is dependable, he wants us to depend on him. God can use your sorrow to strengthen your relationship with him. Think about it this way. If someone is perfectly healthy, it's highly unlikely they will voluntarily end up in my office anytime real soon. When everything in their body seems to be working just fine, why would they seek my help as a medical provider? But during illness, and especially prolonged or serious illness, chances are you'll seek out a medical provider for help. You will make a voluntary choice to see the doctor in a hope to cure that illness. Well, similarly, sometimes God may allow loss and pain into our lives to force a focus back onto him. He does not want us to live our lives alone without him. Even when we forget he is there, he's already with us and he longs to be close to us. So, are you in a situation that seems to want to eat you alive? Are you finding yourself with less and less hope each day? Do you feel overwhelmed with what you have lost? Well, if that describes your situation, let me remind you that Jesus is with you. Now, he is perfectly faithful even though we are not. And because he is with you, his power and grace are also with you and can comfort you. Sometimes life is full of storms and wind and rain, but we do not have to walk through the valleys of life alone. Call out to Jesus. He will meet you right where you are. Keep walking. Don't give up. Don't say you can't make it, because God will make it right alongside you. You are never truly alone. Nothing we lose in life came as a surprise to God. He will restore trust and hope where it has been broken and lost, and he will create in you a heart longing for his will in your life. He will transition your thoughts off of what you have lost and onto the promises of all we are and have in Him. And the best promise of all, God is perfectly faithful, and He will never, ever leave or forsake you. And that's your spiritual moment for the day, Sean.
All right. Spiritual moment is brought to you by our friends at Silverdale Baptist Church. All right. We have literally got a minute left in today's show, and I wanted to share this little bit of information from CNN Health, and it talks about the opioid crisis in America. Experts say the United States has an estimated 10.3 million Americans age 12 and older misusing opioids in 2018. Including 9.9 million prescription pain reliever abusers and 808,000 heroin users. During 2017, there were more than 70,200 overdose deaths in the United States alone.
And I would have about an hour's worth of comments on what you just said, Sean. So, well, yeah, we can't get into that too much.
Yeah.
I will say, as a nod to medical providers, we are being extremely careful. Most of us have either stopped totally writing these or being extremely judicious with our prescribing. But one day we're going to have to talk on the air about where this all came from.
Yes.
How it started. The origin of the opioid crisis is often unknown to the general public. But it is a crisis. It is a huge issue in the United States, really the world right now. And there are even people manufacturing opioids out of their trunks. I mean, they're pulling have their chemistry sets in their trunk of their car. So, yes, it's something that needs to be stopped. And I think that the new laws are putting a dent in it, but they're not perfect either. So we have a lot of work to do.
Well, we'll continue this conversation in another edition of Vital Health Radio, because this is a conversation. It's there's a lot of pieces to it. And it's very complicated
and relevant.
Very heartbreaking that it is taking over this country the way it has. Dr. Green, thank you for allowing me to join you today, and
it's
thank you
blast,
for all you
Sean.
Do for Vital Health Radio.
Thank you.
And Ed Jones will be back here again next week.
We think.
As far as we know, he will be. If he's not, I'll be here to fill his place.
There you go, or we'll join him.
That's true. All right, that does it for this week's edition of Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial right here on 98.1 The Lake. And we are a production from the Whitfield Media Group. I want to thank you for listening, and we'll be back here again next week for another radio show that's all about healthy living. For Dr. Christopher Green from CHI Memorial, I'm Sean Whitfield, filling in for Ed Jones. Have a healthy weekend.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial on 98.1 The Lake with Ed Jones and Dr. Christopher Green. Vital Health Radio, presented by CHI Memorial on 98.1 The Lake, is a production of Whitfield Media Group. Join us next Sunday morning at 9 a.m. and have a great weekend.